just wanted to highlight, they are coming. There have been discussions. We know that there have been discussions with the commercial sector in Australia and with BC, folks in BC. They will come if we let them come. How silly of us if we have already been warned and we still open the doors. I mean, you know, and I wanted to highlight something that in, particularly in the Lower Mainland, there has been an increase in the private colleges in BC. Some would say that that's fair and that that's private enterprise and, you know, good luck to all. Others of us who have worked in the community-based education system would say that that took away from our students and that it was more difficult for us to run our programs. But think about a future where 75% of the workers in an area work for a certain company. It would make sense for that company, not for the community, but for that company then, to open up a training institute. So now it's a little like McDonald's training their staff, isn't it? I mean, that's what we could look forward to in our future here. And that's what makes us so angry. I mean, this is not just about philosophical differences and ideological differences. This is hardcore economics now, and it frightens us. So, thank you, Lynn, for that. Is there any, we'll take about 5 or 10 minutes just for some initial comments, or Sheila?
Sorry, I was at a youth meeting in Vancouver.
Sheila Davidson is the child and youth care advocate for the city of Vancouver.
So I've come from hip-hop.
I'm
trying to get my graphic. You might have already said this. I'm just curious about what the Australian government is saying.
What they have seen? They think we have a terrific children's services system because the number of places have been increased. The only saving that they have made is capital because they haven't, everything else is the same. There's no other savings whatsoever, it's capital. And in fact, when they used to fund the capital to the not-for-profit sector, for one thing, it rolled out according to priorities and they had other priorities met because they actually made you do what they wanted to do, which is fair enough for government. But they used to get a contribution from our provincial governments. They would often make the land available or they would make an actual contribution to the building. They would get contributions from state government, local government as well, who would often put money in for buildings or whatever. So it wasn't even 100% of, you know, federal government paying for the capital. That's really the only minor saving. But they think that we now have, they say there is choice, although we have, like you do, we have a federal competition watchdog. And that body did look at the competition within the sector when the last takeover happened. And they did say that, I guess, 25% wasn't enough to say that there isn't competition. The question they go out with, by the way, is will the takeover push prices up? Because have they created a monopoly sufficient to put prices up? The competition kind of bodies, they're not interested in all those other issues that we might talk about, like quality or all the rest of it. And you couldn't say that they were having a monopoly that would push prices up, but this competition body did say that they were not allowed to open up services in certain communities because they already had too much domination in those. They were not allowed, and they haven't even told us. We know roughly where they are, but they won't make that information available. So our government thinks that generally, I shouldn't speak on behalf of our government, but they've been over here talking to your government and saying, we've got a fantastic system.
So are you considered, Lynn, you and the advocates, are you considered the whiners?
Yes.
Accused of not appreciating the system?
And they think we're naive, that we don't understand that, in fact, the market, which is all the people out there, is sensible and will be able to make the right choice all the time. You know, forget that you mightn't have any, but that they think that we're not business enough. They think that our services, we've been around our services, our non-profit sector, because we began the whole sector, for more than 30 years, like yours. And we're surviving. We actually only lost 48 services in that entire 16 years. So we're sustainable, fine. They took away some funding. Everybody rejigged. They worked out how to make themselves really effective. We have waiting lists, and sometimes they don't. You know, we are sustainable, quality businesses that people choose. And yes, they think we're not businesslike, that we're inefficient, and that we really don't understand the market.
Well, I would just say welcome to the Warriors Club, because certainly we've been called that.
Hi, I'm Rachel. I'm with Grassroots Women. We've had a campaign calling for universal child care. Universal child care is a women's right, so that's one of the things that is, I think, really important to stress, is also the impact that these programs of privatization have on women as child care workers. The majority of us are women.
Yes.
And also as those who need child care services.
Yeah.
My question for you is around the use of domestic worker programs in Australia. That's one of the ways the Canadian government has been pushing a privatized model of child care in a way that severely exploits the child care workers under that program. We have something called the Live-In Caregiver Program, where women from third world countries, primarily the Philippines, come to Canada because of the devastation of the economy there. And for 2 years are forced to not only work in their employer's home, but live in their employer's home. Often they're working 24 hours a day. I mean, the stories that women tell us is
shocking.
2 a.m, knock, knock, knock on the door, and the children that they're supposed to be looking after 8 hours a day want to come in and sleep with them. I mean, they're working 24 hours a day. They're not making that type of wages, that's for sure. And they have only temporary worker status here in Canada, so they're quite vulnerable. So I'm just wondering, in the Australian model,
we don't have it, but I know you do. We don't have that. We don't have that for a range of reasons. You can't get that kind of immigration. You can't come in on that basis, so we don't have that. But I did get someone from Canada sent me today an email about my own newspaper in Melbourne. Melbourne's the capital of Victoria, and there's discussion about opening up these subsidies to nannies. We have nannies, some who are living 24-hour day and would experience the same thing, and some are from, they've been living maybe in Australia, they don't come in just for the job, but they certainly are, sometimes they might be young women, but they certainly are ethnic groups that are often financially disadvantaged. And so today there is debate about opening up the funding to subsidise nannies, and it's such a difficult issue because it's about the person who's advocating it is a member of our federal government, and she's saying, oh, it's about choice, you know, this sort of stuff. But the reality is that if we had a high quality, sustainable system that was affordable and there, it's much better. I mean, who would choose, I think? I don't know why anybody would choose to have their young children, when they're learning their language, being cared for by somebody who can't speak the language, on that one-to-one basis, not getting that great social interaction that you get in a, you know, setting with other children and other adults. And
well, I think that from the experience here, what these families are getting from a domestic worker, many of the domestic workers are actually trained teachers, so they're getting private teachers for their children, who not only provide the education, but they also cook, clean,
they do
laundry,
they
often help with the family business, they do, so it's actually, you know, they're really modern day slaves in the Canadian system, and they're trained teachers, many of them, so they're being used for that skill as well.
And we just don't have that same environment, unfortunately.
Can I take a call? I have a question about the taxpayers of Australia. Isn't there a backlash against this corporation, that public dollars are going into a private system, and like you said, it's paying for mortgages on land, the land value is increasing, and eventually when they sell off or develop that land, public dollars paid for those investments.
That's right. Just look, there is concern about it at the moment, and there's quite a lot of media about those corporations and what's happening within the children's services sector. But to be honest, childcare, I think, is a bit like it is here, although at the moment you've got it as a high-profile issue. A lot of the time, I mean, often people care about childcare when their kids are little, and when they're not, they don't. And we still have a lot of debates about should women be at home anyway. Our government funds a whole lot of stay-at-home type policies, so we have some ideological questions that are, you know, out there in the community, and we're just not a community that is totally realistic. I mean, you know, same as you, by the time someone's child is, the youngest child is 3, 75% of women are back in the paid workforce. I mean, that kind of reality seems to not come home, and it's not an issue that is really high on everyone's agenda. So it's like you, it's really hard to get it there and keep it there and get those issues out in the open. And but there is a lot of questioning at the moment about the corporate childcare sector, and our business newspapers will write issues about it. Some people probably think it's really smart. And the other odd thing is that it's regarded as an ethical investment. And that'll happen to you too, because we have a lot of people who want to make, you know, if they're going to invest in something, they'd like it to be ethical. So childcare is ethical. So there are a lot of people probably, I expect, you know, if you've got $1 million, a company that's got an expected profit next year of $88 million and will be returning money to shareholders, and it's ethical. Complicated.
Yes.
Another question. If the quality of care in the corporate-run centers is fairly low, have they noticed any deficiencies in the children going from that into the public school system?
We haven't done that kind of, tracking of children, and it would be, someone else has already raised that with me. We just don't have that kind of data collection in place, and you know, maybe it would have been terrific, and you are in a position to develop that kind of collection system now, but when you go back to 1991, those sorts of issues were not even on the broad public agenda. We didn't have all the discussion that we do now about outcomes for children and what contributes to their developmental, you know, outcomes, etc. It's on the debate now, and you could develop a terrific research program, but we don't have that.
That would be something that would be a good idea to start.
Yes, I think if I were you, I'd be getting a number of research projects in place, and certainly for us, we would love to do that. Our particular federal government at the moment is not that concerned about the issue that they would put money into that kind of research.
Probably not a research project that government would fund should they think that the outcomes wouldn't be good for the programs they're supporting, but that's just my guess. I don't know. Marianne?
Given the experience that you just shared with us, can you give us any suggestions? In some ways, we are at the beginning stages of childcare in which we've been for years.
Yep.
But if we really are hoping to develop, as the Prime Minister and the Minister responsible, at least at the federal level, wants to see the development of a system, not more regulation. What would be your suggestions?
There's a number of things I think you should put in place. You certainly need to have some government goals that are around a sustainable system. So that raises questions about funding owners that are not publicly responsible. You really do need a planning framework so that if you're going to have services developed, you get them developed where they're needed and address some of those priorities that government has. You really need to get the wages and conditions right for your workforce. I suspect if these large corporations had to pay people appropriately and really had to have good child-staff ratios, they possibly wouldn't be in business because I don't think they'd make enough money. So you need to get those wages and conditions right. You need to get your training and education system right. And I think you need to also have a really good look at what is affordable childcare. Those are the questions about, and yours is a bit different to ours, but you know, we've moved to a point where our fees now, in fact today I heard that some services in our inner cities have gone up to $100 a day. So that's $500 a week. And even with our subsidies that come in, that is unaffordable, of course, for many people. And you need to be really making sure that it's affordable. I know it's the stuff that you're talking about today, but that's what's really critical. Planning for a start, and that question of what is it that makes the system sustainable? And I can't imagine that we'll ever conclude that it is government funding to private owners who can, you know, own everything and then sell it off. Doesn't really seem very logical to me. So those are the messages I'm making.
One more quick one from Stephanie, and then we will have time for
The question I wanted to ask you is, what is the reaction during this transition? You've gone from yours to the corporate.
Yes.
What's the reaction of the parents?
Well, one of the problems we have in Australia, which you may have, I don't know, is that the waiting lists for services are enormous. So you take one community, one of our local government areas, they have more than twice the number of families waiting for a service than places that are available. So that is a huge problem. So if families can get childcare, because they are working, they have to do something. There is a real temptation to say, I don't really care how I get it, but I need it. And I say that, but on the other hand, we know that there have been some communities where a corporate chain has tried to open a service, maybe in a public facility, because that can happen too. They can actually go into a public facility. There's been community outcry and they've had to go. From one community in particular, they couldn't open it because the community stood up and said no. But we have the waiting list, so families, I think, would prefer to be in a non-profit service. We even hear from some big companies, just like a big company like, say, a petrochemical company or something, their workers and those company directors would prefer to have a non-profit service because they actually know what you have to do to make a business profitable. So we hear all of that, but we don't have enough childcare, and the reality is that being really informed as a brand new parent with children about quality childcare and all of those issues, it's a really big ask, and getting that kind of education out into the community is something we certainly haven't been able to afford to do. That's probably the other thing that you would want to do. Really, you need families to know what is it that they look for. And it isn't just clean, shining walls, and it's a lot more than that.
I think that's very similar to here. Okay, Stephanie.
Hi, I'm Stephanie, and I'm a very proud unionized childcare worker. Mm-hmm. And you had mentioned industrial relations in Australia being quite different, and I just wondered what role trade unions might play. My union is co-hosting this evening.
I think he's going to talk about it.
But I was just curious, in Australia, if there's a role that trade unions play in advocating on behalf of childcare and childcare workers?
There is. We're just about to have a change to our industrial relations environment to make it a bit more like yours, and so we're a little bit worried about what will happen in the future. But up until now, we've basically been a workforce that has worked according to, we call them awards. So we have a childcare worker award. It's like a thing like this, which is the childcare worker award. And within that, according to your qualifications and experience, you get different levels of pay. And the union can take that to court and can argue with the employers about, how to increase it. And that's how come we got the increases in three states just at the moment. To be honest, the unions were not the first to do it. It was the community sector that said to the union, they are your members, you are the only one who can go into court and get this done. You need to do it and we'll support you. And then we also have different unions covering different states and all sorts of things. But nevertheless, for us, you have to have the union going to court against the employers and arguing it out. And we did get really significant increases, at least 25% of most of the salary work, that sort of increase has gone through. So it's very important, and we've always worked together, the community sector and the unions, and really fundamental way to take us forward, and we really hope that we don't lose too much of that collective bargaining under the new arrangements. At the moment, we know that we're being told that the current award system will be the kind of starting point, but it's the future to get increases in the future, and the unions, the whole of this, well, I suppose half the Australian community is worried about that. And the unions are extremely worried about that.
Thank you. Well, you just don't get a more perfect segue than that.
No, so I'm going to thank you.